I'm Larry Morrow, and this is Take Two, the radio program that looks inside a person's adventure, not so much from the outside in, but the inside out. In the next 30 minutes, you will discover the inward joy of his heart that married him to the passion of his life and the affirmation of ideals that directed his success. My very special guest today is a name that everybody knows the voice, and everybody knows the face. It's Carl Monday. Hey, Carl, how are you, my friend?
At least they know the back of my head, because on TV, usually that's the perspective, because the camera usually is behind the reporter. And as the years went by, that spot on the back of my head, that bald spot, kept getting bigger and bigger. So,
Well, you know, we all get those when we get a little older, right?
That's what I understand.
Say, why is he wearing a hat? For those of you who caught the first part of the interview, in part one of our interview, we spoke a lot about your early years and growing up in this wonderful area. What led you into a successful television career, Carl, which in this town, no one has done any better. Your trench coat became your calling card for the most part. And as you continued to climb to the top of your career, expressing your own unique Carl Monday that stretched to the network level, during this process, were you ever regulated or drew criticism from any of your supervisors and called you on the carpet and say, hey, Carl, you know what? You may have gone just a little bit too far with that story or with that person. Carl, did that ever happen?
Well, that actually happened quite often, because I think part of being an investigative reporter is you take the story to the limit. And sometimes you cross the line. Sometimes you do go too far. And I'd been hauled in more than a few times by my general manager, my news director, but more often than not, the stories were cleared ahead of time, so they knew what the story was going to be about sometimes before we even shot the story. We consulted with attorneys, sometimes with the general manager, if we knew the story would have greater repercussions. But for the most part, I'd have to say that I was giving a long leash during my 40 years of investigative reporting, and I think the popularity of investigative reporting, not only by myself but other reporters in town, I think it was a very sellable item for the news departments and the sale departments, and I think that played to our advantage, because we became, in effect, a valuable member of the news team and the station, and we generated revenue for the stations.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe at least in my mind, the most powerful and remembered altercation in my time in Cleveland happened in 1984, when you had to deal with feisty George Forbes, perhaps at that time the most prominent and political figure and powerful city council president in Cleveland history. If my memory serves me, it came close to a physical altercation. And I can still see it, Carl. I can still see you sitting there talking to George Forbes in his office. Take us back to that time.
You know, I did, maybe 5,000 investigations during my career. Larry, I bet you don't remember 4,999 of them. But I think, no. but as you indicated, you do remember this one, and for good reason. You know, after that story aired, and I'll get into the details in a second, but, you know, the switchboard blew up at Channel 8. We had over 1,000 calls within 2 hours. Cleveland Magazine, the Plain Dealer, the columnists were writing columns about it. Cleveland Magazine called it a double X-rated drama on the local news. Here's what they had to say about it. I pulled out the old clipping. Channel 8 reporter Carl Monday reported, a story that has triggered more immediate emotional response than any local news story since Dennis Kucinich brazenly fired Police Chief Richard Hengisto on camera in 1978. I'll give you an indication of the endurance of the story. Naturally, the reaction was just immense when it happened. But I was at a wedding in Columbus 2 weeks ago, and somebody came up to me and said, hey, I was at work, and I was talking. I told him I knew you, And I brought up the story of George Forbes and played it for him. And we got a good laugh out of it. So here it is. So 37 years later, you know, thanks to the internet, mainly, that story lives on. And, you know, became part of the folklore of Cleveland television. But there was much more to the story. I mean, the backdrop of the story was Cleveland was, 5 years removed from default. Remember, the city almost went into default in the late 70s. But the city was still in a financial mess. And one of my sources called me and said, Carl, they're trying to get raise the taxes here. They're going to have a tax levy before the voters. Maybe they ought to collect some of the money that, they're not collecting, like the water bills. So we looked, and there was like $35, $40 million of uncollected water bills in the city. And we got a list of all the people who owed money. And lo and behold, we found, a half a dozen Cleveland City Council persons on that list, including Mike White, who later on became mayor, and George Forbes, who, as you said, was the most powerful person in the city. The only difference when other people, if you and I weren't paying our water bill, they'd cut off our water. But the council people, including Forbes, they hadn't paid their water bills in over a year and continued to get water service. Well, George owed about $400. And I knew George because I did news on, he had a radio show in town and I did news on there. So we had a pretty good relationship, but I caught him at a bad time. It was on a Monday morning right before a committee hearing at City Hall. And I walk in and, I said, George, I want to talk to you about your water bill. No big deal, he says. City ain't going to go broke over it. So he was still in a pretty good frame of mind at that point. But then I started to press him. I said, George, you're a successful politician, a successful businessman, an attorney. You can't pay a $400 water bill. That's when the tide turned, because George went on a 3.5-minute tirade laced with vulgarities. We had to bleep out of like every third word of that confrontation. But at one point, he started to walk away, and then he started to walk back towards me, and he pointed his finger in my face and says, one of these days, I'm going to take that bleeping camera and wrap it around your bleeping face. And that was the beginning, just the beginning of it. At one point, other council members had to actually grab him and restrain him, because Lord knows what he would have done at that point. The good of it is that George realized, what he had done. And through the years, we actually kind of became cordial. In fact, the 20th anniversary of the I-Team, and they wanted me to do a series of stories, like update stories that I had done in the past. And of course, we had to update this one. So George, through the years, anytime he would see me at City Hall, he would say, Monday, when are you going to give me that Emmy you want for that story? He thought he deserved the Emmy, not me. So on the 20th anniversary, I went up to his law firm at the Rockefeller Building downtown, and I knocked on his door, and he opens the door, and I said, George, here's your Emmy. we had the camera rolling. But on a serious side, he ran for mayor and was the favorite to win the mayor's job in 1989. Benny Bonanno was a candidate, Mike White, Tim Hagan, but Forbes was the favorite, but he lost, and White became mayor. And George had told some other folks that I knew at City Hall, other reporters, that he felt the reason that he had lost, the main reason he had lost, because he had raised a lot of money and had a lot of support, was because of that confrontation. He says he could never live it down, that people would just remember that awful display of a response to a reporter asking a legitimate question. A story about a water bill, in the end, maybe helped shape Cleveland history, because he never became mayor as a result of that.
Carl, other than George Forbes saying that he was going to kick your butt, you indicated that he never did. But there were people who did try to kick your butt, didn't they?
Well, not only tried, but they succeeded, Larry. there was the one time, and I remember it because it was one of those huge snowstorm days, and they had us all out covering the storm. And I was on Public Square, and I got stuck in the snow, and I was going back and forth rocking the car to try to get out of the snow. And I destroyed the transmission, so I had to back the car all the way from Public Square all the way to our studios at 1300 Chester Avenue. But I had a 1 o'clock appointment with some guy from EMS. We were going to meet at a Red Barn, a restaurant at the time, out in Collinwood. So I took, the buses were still running, so I took a bus to meet him there because my car wasn't running. And so I meet the guy who was an EMS paramedic, and we concluded the interview, and I hopped on the bus to go back to the station, and there were 7 or 8 youths who had just gotten out of Collinwood High School and jumped on the bus, and they started, you know, giving me some lip, and I was giving them lip back at first, and every time I tried to get up, another guy would punch me in the head or in the face. You know, they ripped my jacket with a knife. They stole my recorder. They took the watch right off my wrist, stole my watch. And then they just started taking shots at me. And then the next thing I know, I'm lying on the floor of an RTA bus as it's driving down East 152nd Street. And, the bus driver kept driving. He didn't stop. But at some point, he came to a stop and stopped at the bus stop, and the paramedics jumped on the bus to attend to me. And wouldn't you know it, one of the guys was the paramedic I just interviewed about 20 minutes earlier at the Red Barn. And he looks at me and said, "What happened to you?" So fortunately, I wasn't seriously injured, but boy, I felt it for a few days. And to this day, I don't know what provoked it. I think they just thought, let's just have some fun with this guy.
Carl, I can remember some of your investigative stories. Your investigation into the corruption into the Cleveland Fire Department's inspection unit led to the firing of the city fire marshal. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, garnered the National Headliner Award for investigative reporting. And I remember vividly when that happened. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, we got a tip that Cleveland fire inspectors were forging their inspection records. So What else do we do? We spent about a month following them around. There was a detail down in the flats that was supposed to investigate violations, fire code violations at nightclubs. And we spent a couple evenings following them around. And the only nightclubbing we saw them do was going to a bar drinking all night. And then naturally, we asked for the inspection records, and we found that they falsified their records and even put in for overtime when they hadn't inspected in a single building. We also, you know, went around town and showed how, you know, inspections just weren't being done at all. We followed some other fire inspectors to a bar near downtown. It was the day, because I remember it was the day of the Oklahoma bombing explosion. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And these firefighters are sitting at the bar drinking, watching network coverage of the Oklahoma explosion. I'm thinking, you guys are watching that coverage, you should be out inspecting buildings in Cleveland, you know. And there they were sitting and drinking. And then again, we looked at their inspection records and they falsified them. I mean, we followed the chief fire inspector, the fire marshal around, and, you know, we got him at home cutting his grass during the day and all doing all these kind of things. But the result of it is the mayor called a news conference, Mayor White at the time. He said, "Today I'm announcing that the firing of our Cleveland fire marshal." This was just days after we had aired the story about him, and so he was, he lost his job over it. Then there were reforms in the fire department, and we were fortunate to, like you say, win the National Headliner Award for that story.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? I'm only going to go through a couple of more stories that many of us remember, but you also exposed the dumping of the dangerous chemical waste at Hopkins Airport. The airport commissioner was later fired. Boy, I'll tell you what, you come around and people just lose their jobs one after another. And he also, that commissioner was also fired as well, was he not?
Yeah. In fact, I went to... The short end of the story is that somebody called to give us a tip that there were barrels and barrels of toxic chemicals buried under an old runway at Hopkins. And, you know, we started checking and found out that they were dumping, you know, like old barrels of paint and had toluene in it and other dangerous chemicals. And after we aired the story, they went out and started digging up, and sure, they found, you know, like 150 barrels of the stuff that they'd been dumping for years under the guy, under the direction of the commissioner. I walked up to the commissioner at the airport, and I says, head's going to roll because of this. And he said, what do you mean heads are going to roll? Well, his head rolled. He not only was fired, but he not only lost his job, but he was prosecuted in federal court and, you know, sentenced to prison for illegal dumping of toxic chemicals at Cleveland Hopkins Airport. We did 28 stories on it. The Justice Department got involved. City Council had hearings. We found that they were dumping it in creeks out there. It just became a massive story that, you know, really took a couple of years to tell. But somebody was joking me one time. They said, you know, ever since you came in town and started doing investigative reporting, the unemployment rate has gone up. So because we've gotten our share of people, you know, city employees, county employees, who have lost their jobs as a result of our stories, or in some cases even gone to prison.
You know, Carl, one of the stories that that really touched me was you had uncovered the accidental overdose deaths of three patients, and they were all linked to one doctor, resulting in the first conviction in history of an Ohio physician, if I can remember correctly, on charges of manslaughter. How did you get to that story, Carl?
A woman called and said, my boyfriend, and she sent me a picture of him lying on the bathroom floor, had overdosed and died from drugs he got from this doctor who ran a pain clinic downtown. So we says, well, you know, that's one death. Maybe there were others. So we went down to the coroner's office, and we started looking through records. And just in the previous, like, 2 months, three other people, all patients of his, had died from overdoses. We aired a number of stories on it. The county prosecutor got involved, and he became, the first doctor in the history of Ohio to be convicted of manslaughter in the death of his patients. And I guess the funny thing about it is we got a tip from somebody that right before his sentencing that he was going to skip town. So somehow we got word to him that we could get him a phony passport to the Philippines, where he was from. So we set up a phony a passport scam, and we met him in a parking lot. And my photographer, Herb Thomas, went up to him with a Polaroid camera and started taking passport pictures of him. And we sold him a phony passport on hidden camera. And then we immediately called the police, and they went to his house and arrested him for the second time. And the judge wasn't too happy about it, that he was going to skip town, and she slapped another year on his 4-year sentence. So he did 5 years in prison after our stories aired. And, but he still sued me anyway. I mean, he still felt he had a case against me, but that case was thrown out of court. So,
yeah. You know, for those of you who just tuned in, you're listening to Take Two. I'm Larry Morrow. My very special guest today is an old pal of mine that I've remembered through my entire 40-plus years career in Cleveland. Surely not only the most remembered name and the most remembered face, but the most decorated guy in this town as well, which we'll talk about in a minute. Carl, we've talked about some serious things that have gone on in your life, but then some comical things have gone on as well. Tell us about Mustache Monday, which happened a long time ago, but was satirized on a national Comedy Central, The Daily Show, in a segment where they pulled the pug on you. and you know what? It sounds comical, but it started out on a sort of a serious note, did it not?
Well, yeah, it was a story about crime in the libraries. And we took hidden cameras in local libraries, and we caught a young man in his 20s doing an act while watching pornography on the computer. And it was near the children's section at the one of the county branches. So we confronted the guy outside his home, and somehow it took off. He was wearing an Ohio State sweatshirt, and the people of Michigan saw the story. The reason they saw it is because John Stewart, from Comedy Central got wind of our story, and he sent somebody down, a reporter down, to confront me outside my residence. And they did a whole story on it, a national story, kind of tongue in cheek. The reporter reporter was wearing a similar trench coat to mine, and had a mustache, and it was all in good fun. But it took off from there. They started, I was getting pictures from out of state. People were holding Carl Monday Halloween parties where everybody was dressed as Carl Monday in a trench coat and a mustache, even the women. And then there was like a minor league team that had Carl Monday day. You got in free if you wore a trench coat or had a mustache. So, it just took off. It was right at the onset of social media, and it got a million clicks in the first couple of days. And back then that was really something, I guess. But even the Plain Dealer did a front page story on it, that the Monday Mania, an internet sensation, they called it.
Well, I remember one of the questions that they had asked you: how do you kick a man when he's down, Carl? I mean, there is no answer to that.
No,
is there?
What do you say?
And of course, the segment was entitled "Rubbing Out Crime."
Yeah, it's a real trip being on the other end of that microphone, I'll tell you. Yeah.
Okay, you know, Carl, aside from the well-deserved accolades which you have brought with great, which you have won actually with great distinction, you do more than just share your share of charitable work. Can you talk about that briefly? I know you don't enjoy talking about that part of your life, but would you do it just for a second? Because I think it stirs the heart of many people who know and love you.
Well, sometimes the stories have positive consequences. We were approached by a family who said that their father's business wouldn't pay for his young son's lung transplant, $1 million procedure. So we ran the story, a series of stories, and we got one of the local hospitals to pay for the operation, $1 million operation. And we went out to St. Louis where the operation was done. And, you just get a good feeling when that kind of thing happens. We did a story on food waste, on how restaurants and caterers were throwing food out, at the end of the day, rather than, sending it to a food bank. And after we aired the story, we got such a great response that we started a group called Food Rescue, which we picked up food. We bought four donated trucks to us, and we picked up refrigerator trucks, and we picked up this food and took it to hunger centers, and we raised into the millions of pounds of food. And that program is now part of the Cleveland Food Bank, the Greater Cleveland Food Bank. And and it all originated from one tip and one story we did about food waste. And some stories you do and you think, God, this is going to change the world, and the next day nobody's even talking about it. And then another story that maybe you hadn't anticipated has far-reaching results that that hopefully will live for generations.
You know, Carl, you have won several awards. Some of these awards, a lot of people use them just like an Academy Award. And in our business, that award is called what, Carl?
It's called the Emmy.
The Emmys. So, Carl, how many do you have? I don't mean to embarrass you, but how many do you have?
It's easy for me because it's an even 50. So I think that means I've been around for a long time, I think.
Yeah,
that's what it means.
Can you imagine? I mean, and you've been, you just mentioned you've been around a long time, but you've been blessed with the moniker Dean of Cleveland Investigative Reporters simply because, to be honest, you really set the standard for investigative reporting with three different television stations in your 6-decade career. And you're still working, aren't you, Carl?
Yeah, I'm still dabbling in it. I still do some special reports occasionally for Fox 8. Hopefully, we'll have one coming up in the next few months. But I'm kind of semi-retired. But as you know, Larry, there's no such thing as being semi-retired. You're either in it or you're not. And But it's hard. It is hard to let go, to be honest with you.
You know, what you've accomplished in all of these years in front of a camera is not only valued, but I think it's essential for the business we're in. Your sense of loyalty to your craft elevated you to a sense of admiration only a few ever rise to. And what I love most about you, Carl Mundy, is that you push the boundaries for everyone in television industry to follow. And I just want you to know what a pleasure it is to be with you again. You and I have lunch from time to time and love to get together. I adore your bride, Sandy, as you well know.
Just
so
really,
please give her my best.
We just celebrated our 47th anniversary yesterday, as a matter of fact.
And you're climbing, you're getting close to me. We just celebrated number 48.
Fabulous.
Carl, thank you, my friend. Great to be with you again.
Larry, always a pleasure.
And for those of you just tuned in, this is Take Two, and I'm Larry Morrow.